Hi there, I'm Deb Crow, and I want to welcome you to Season 4 of Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast where we connect, learn, and laugh together with authentic and courageous leaders from all over the globe. You will learn from leaders you haven't even met yet. You will gain new tools to add to your leadership toolkit, because leadership belongs to all of us. It is not measured by stature or title. So please pull up a chair and listen in. This is the Imperfect Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. Welcome back to Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. I'm always delighted when I meet a local leader, and I want to welcome Craig Jameson to the show today. And Craig, I mean, we met at a networking event, which is such a nemesis for many, because it's hard to get, you know, at a large networking event and you don't know a lot of people. And you and I landed up at the Tech Alliance one in December at a really cool airport hangar. And it just goes to show that when you meet someone and have an aligned conversation like we did, it wasn't just an exchange of cards. We've been chatting ever since. We're probably going to do some work together. And I wanted to share your greatness on the podcast. So welcome.
Thanks for having me, Deb, and thanks for the kind words. Not often I get called great, so.
Well, there you go. And we're imperfect on this show. So laughter, candor, humor, it's all welcome. So I'm going to start with my leadership questions. And I'm excited because you work for a recruiting firm. So before I ask my leadership questions, just tell our listeners a little bit about your role and what you do and a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure. And again, thanks for the opportunity. So yeah, I represent our subsidiary of our company is Archworks, which covers a different vertical of what we do as an organization. And I lean more to that end of it, but I can get into that a little bit more. So I'm the director of talent solutions for that organization. I wear many different hats. Arch is we're an up-and-coming company. We're a challenger brand that really believes that the industry of recruitment is long overdue for an overhaul, that there's a lot of archaic processes and it's ripe for disruption. So we do consider ourselves a challenger brand in the industry. And I think the biggest challenge that we see that needs to be overcome in the market is just overall value for the clients and customers that use these types of services. So when we look at how we're going to approach our service offerings, that's always top of mind for us, is how can we deliver the most value to our clients by still delivering on succeeding in their goals and initiatives. And of course, we got to keep the lights on as a company as well. So that's what we look at. So my role is highly in cultivating relationships with potential clients and customers who are looking at their talent strategy and looking for better ways to approach and engage talent in the marketplace. Better ways to optimize recruitment so they can get the most out of their internal resources. And also, you know, are they stretched too thin and can they bring in external resources in order to sort of fill out those stop gaps or mitigate those bottlenecks that do happen during that recruitment process? Another part of my role is to ensure delivery. And so what I mean by delivery is ensuring that our clients are getting the most out of our service, our solutions, and ultimately they're getting the people that they're looking for in order to align and support their major business initiatives and goals. So, you know, I work with the recruiters to ensure that, you know, we have good account management with our clients and our customers, keep them in the loop, always consulting, always providing insight, and then also working with them as far as tackling the candidate market. And I apply what's called sales effectiveness recruitment to tackle that. And really my whole vision of this is that recruiters are salespeople, whereas, you know, regular salespeople are going after companies, recruiters are going after people. And it's their job to sell what they have to offer, which are these amazing opportunities that our clients are looking to fill as far as roles go. So we teach them how to essentially cold call candidates to be able to call them up and disrupt the flow of conversation, start asking questions about their current career challenges, what they want to get out of their next career decision, and really looking to align the opportunities that we have to offer with what the candidate is looking for in that next step in their career. And I think alignment is the operative word there, because what we do is alignment. I often joke that, you know, we're Chuck Woolery from Love Connection or whatnot, but that's typically what we're trying to do, is we're trying to align our clients' requirements with what the candidate can bring to the table. But it also goes two ways, especially now more than ever, because it's a very candidate-driven market. And the candidates really do lead a lot of those conversations. The unemployment rate in Canada is 5.80 right now, and really only half of that unemployment rate in the what we call the active talent market is really eligible for work. So you don't have a lot of well-aligned candidates. So we have to make double sure that when we're bringing these candidates to the table, they are well-aligned. But also, what's in it for the candidate, right? Because they're driving that conversation. It's not a large talent pool out there. And because it's not a large talent pool, we have to really lean on what's called passive recruitment. So going after candidates that are already working, they already have positions in companies, and enticing them to leave their current role, which is no easy task, and bring them over to another company. So we really need to get in the heads of the candidates and figure out what are their motivators, and wave a magic wand, what does that ideal position look like, and are they getting that from their current opportunity? And if not, can they grow and develop at the next company, which could potentially be our client, as if we put them forward to fill a position?
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to this conversation. You've already talked about so many things that are on the minds of people and questions that we've had from listeners. You know, you talk about that enticing. And since May of 2020, I have had 90 clients, current and past, move. They've either taken a demotion, they've completely moved sectors. COVID, that was one of the benefits, is people got time to pause and reflect and really audit of, do I really want to do this anymore? I had a CEO from oil and gas move to confectionery. That was probably the most drastic one. And it was a candy that he used to have as a young kid, and it grounded him back to stories of his grandparents and time spent with them in the summer. And this is the level that even C-suites went to. I just find this fascinating.
Yeah.
So I better get asking you questions, because
if I can comment on that, Debbie, I think you hit the nail on the head that during COVID and shortly after COVID, people put a lot of stock in what they want out of the rest of their life.
100%.
And what they truly want to do for work and what makes them happy. And the time they got to spend with their loved ones and their family, I think that made them realize a lot more that work-life balance is super important. And, you know, it's not just about work, right?
No.
You're either a person who lives to work or works to live. And I think more people have sort of taken stake in working to live after COVID. And so, you know, there are many candidates out there that are looking to pivot. A good example would be, I don't know if you've heard of Higher Landing, but I'm a panelist with that organization, and it's called the Grizzly Den. And it's essentially like the Dragon's Den, but what they do is they work with candidates and workshops and stuff who want to make a pivot in their career. They're kind of mid-level, they're looking to make that next step, or they're looking to change industries, or maybe they're new to the country and their experience, although great in the country they were working in, isn't as sought after, so that they need to kind of bulk up that career profile and make themselves a lot more marketable and whatnot, right? So I sat on a panel, and these people present to us about, you know, why they're marketable for these roles that they're going to be going after. And then we provide feedback on, you know, how they can be more marketable, what those next steps look like and things like that from a consultative point of view. And then we end up endorsing them at the end on whether or not, you know, we believe that they're marketable to the current job market. And it's to serve them. It's so they can put their best foot forward. So it's really a rewarding experience. But there's a guy that he's a freelance, call him a brand manager or whatever, but he's worked with great brands like MTV and Shopify and stuff like that. And guy's making like, that doesn't work for less than $2,500 a day, right? But he's got a 7-year-old son and he doesn't want to miss his son growing up. He wants to spend more time with his family and his son. So now he's looking at how can I take this skill set and move it into a corporate environment and get more of a steady gig, a 9-to-5 thing where I can be home at night for my son and stuff like that. So just an example of what candidates are looking for nowadays and how their decisions are very personally motivated. Nowadays, it's not just about money. In fact, the number one thing that a candidate wants above money, can you guess what it is?
Time, quality of life.
It's work-life balance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because there's a push and pull in the market now because the employers, they've got, you know, stake in buildings and office leases and things like that. So they're really trying to pull the candidates back into the office where the candidates are like, no, I want to stay at home. So there's a real push and pull. And I was going to make a prediction that the corporations are starting to win a little bit because of the current economy and the inflation. They're not exactly spoiled for choice. They've got to put food on the table and the employer is willing to hire them, but on their terms, then they need to get their heads wrapped around going back into the office. And in fact, I was on the job boards the other day and I couldn't see any opportunities for remote work.
Yeah.
It's all hybrid. Yeah. So I think that's sort of the settling point is that you can have some work-life balance, but we also expect you to be in the office
Absolutely.
As well.
I think you've answered my first question about believing the talent agency market is ripe for disruption. I think we've talked about that. My second question is, what imperfections does Craig bring to his heart-centered leadership?
I read your book, and so I'm really kind of going aligning with the book and sort of the things that taught me. And I think one of the main things I got from your book is humility. It's being able to look inside yourself and, you know, realize your mistakes. Okay. And I think sometimes myself, if I look at imperfections, I can be overly confident, I think, in my resolve and my decisions, and sometimes less likely to listen to other people's opinions and whatnot because I'm super confident about the decision that I'm making. So I think that's one of my big imperfections. And one thing that I could work on is, I guess, just having the insight to understand that maybe I'm not right all the time and that there are different avenues and roads that I can look at before making a final decision. I make decisions fast too. I'm logical about it, but it's a quick thinking process and I move forward quite quickly. And sometimes without measuring, you know, all the different options and what those inevitable outcomes would be. So I think that's something personally that I can definitely work on. I think another one too is time management, where to spend your time. Really focusing on high value opportunities. There's a real balance with what I do because I have to bring in revenue for the company that I work for. But at the same time, I need to be there for my existing clients and my teams and stuff like that. So it's really, where do you put your energy? I always go into every day with thinking when I'm kind of, we all have our to-do list, like what do I want to accomplish today and stuff like that. What are those high value activities, right? And what needs to be taken care of now and what can wait?
Yeah.
I'm also a big believer of linear decision-making too, though, that if something is really quick and easy, like answering an email that's been kind of sitting there for 3 days. You're like, oh, I got to get to that. It's just finally go, okay, I'm going to do it and then just move on, right? So if something's quick and easy to do, get it done so that it's off your plate and then you can get back to focusing on those high value opportunities just so it doesn't come back to bite you in the butt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're in good company. We've had similar imperfections talked about before, and I think we all can fall prey to some of the ones that you've said. And like you said, it's an easy correct when we just get the stuff done. My third question was around the trends, which I think we've already talked about. And then my last question is interesting, and we've talked a little bit about it, but I want to ask it to you. In your opinion, how are companies shifting in terms of educational requirements versus experience, especially for the older population, which is now called modern elders, and this would be 45 years and older, our number one demographic globally in the workforce? I've talked to a couple of people within recruiting and talent management that are now eliminating having a BA as eligibility criteria for hiring because they've got someone with amazing heart-centered leadership skills, 30 plus years experience. I would love for you to weigh in what you've seen and what you think about that.
Yeah, I love this topic because it's one that's near and dear to my heart because I don't have post-secondary education. I went a different path. I didn't have the opportunity to go to college or university. And I've had to kind of make my way through my career, leaning on, I guess the skills and the abilities and the intelligence that was bestowed on me by my parents and my relationships throughout life, and just had to figure it out. Yeah. And I've done okay. I mean, I consider myself a very capable human being in a lot of business aspects and personal aspects. Huh? Not to say that education isn't important. It's just not something for me that I'm really well rounded with. So it's tough for me to speak to that other side of the coin, I guess. But yeah, the number one, actually, it's a really big trend right now on LinkedIn and all over the talent blogs and stuff like that. But skills first hiring is definitely a priority for companies. Mm-hmm. Again, it comes down to the talent pool because if you have, and we always try to tackle these types of things during our intake calls with our clients. If you have a laundry list of requirements and you expect every box to get checked off, I'm sorry, it's going to be really super tough for you to hire somebody. I think the market is about leniency. I think it's about taking stock in what's super important to you, what's a trainable skill, right? What can be taught, and really getting a feel for, I think people will say, okay, so we need an accountant, right? A junior accountant or something like that, right? And then they think, well, all accountants come with CPAs, so we're just going to put a CPA on the job description. But do they really need a CPA for what they're doing, right? Let's just see they're doing ledgers and things like that, and it's stuff that they can kind of do in their sleep through a career in accounting with or without a CPA. So I do caution employers to really think about certifications. Are they needed? Mm-hmm. Is post-secondary education needed? And I think ultimately, if thinking and learning and developing is a big part of the job, and the education is definitely an important factor. I mean, doctors have to be highly educated. Lawyers need to be highly educated because it's so involved, right? But I think one of the greatest examples is salespeople. Okay. I laugh when I see salespeople ads and they're asking for an MBA. Because I don't believe that an MBA makes you a good salesperson. It gives you a good aspect around knowledge of business and things like that. But sales is about people skills, right? It's about it's about understanding people's problems and motivations and working towards a solution together. I think it's a real partnership. And again, I don't have an MBA, but I don't think that they teach you those types of skills throughout those courses, right? And sales is just about effectiveness. It's about can they close a deal or not, right? So I think numbers and achievements speak volumes. And whenever I do consultations with people on their resumes, the first thing I look for is what did they succeed in their past roles? And how quantifiable was that? And how did it align with critical business goals? So did they bring revenue in? Did they optimize efficiency? Things that, you know, a C-suite person or even a hiring manager is going to care about. Because ultimately it comes down to, can the person do the role, right?
Yeah.
So if they have an MBA, but they don't really understand the practicalities of what it takes to do the certain role, then they're not going to be successful. So they need to be able to show a track record of succeeding in that role that they're working for. And that doesn't necessarily mean education. In fact, in a lot of ways, a lot of times or situations or scenarios, education isn't even a factor because these are all practical on the job skills that you only learn by gaining experience throughout your career development.
Absolutely. So,
you know, Google, Amazon, all these big tech companies are scrapping post-secondary education from their job requirements. Now they test you. Like if you say you're a developer and you don't have an education, they will have you come in and they will sit over your shoulder while you put in code and see that you have to prove you can do it.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing I would say is that education, as we evolve as a society, education's expensive for the younger generation, inflation, all kinds of things like that. People are finding other way of learning. Podcast would be one. Listening to podcasts, YouTube videos, on the job experience, mentorships, whatever it might be, not necessarily formal education, but that's not to discount that their knowledge isn't suitable for the type of role that they're working in, whether or not they have that education degree. And the tech companies like Google and Amazon and stuff, they see this, right? And they know that, you know, there could be people that are learning how to software program in their basement, right? And, you know, didn't take any formal education, but could program their way around somebody who's got a degree in computers.
Yeah,
because they're self-taught and they got it, right? So I think ultimately it just comes down to the employers just need to ask the one question. Can the person do the job? Are they going to be successful and achieve in the role, education or not? So
absolutely. Great example.
And I think, again, going back to the talent pool and that leniency factor, if you're struggling to hire somebody and you're asking for an MBA, but the person really doesn't need an MBA to accomplish the role. If you want to see more candidates, if you want to have more worthwhile conversations with you know, potential top talent, you need to look past that and just ask yourself what are the requirements needed? You know, not necessarily what does that ideal candidate profile look like, or are we just putting in the MBA? Because if I went on ChatGPT and it said what are the qualifications for this role, MBA came up. And I think that also comes down to having a good consultant and being able to educate yourself on the market, the candidate market, and talking to a company, you know, that's in the space about, you know, job descriptions and job scopes and things like that, and how to make them attractive and what's pertinent and what's not so much.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to pivot to my Fab Four, just four quick, fun questions. Just want to know what's on the top of that brilliant mind of yours. First question, name a phrase or word that shows up in your daily leadership.
Daily leadership.
What's something you catch yourself saying on repeat?
This is the one I say all the time. I appreciate you.
I love that. All right. Let me ask you my second question. Name a book that you've read at any juncture in your life. What was the name of the book? Who was the author and why was it impactful?
Honestly, I would say the book that really impacted me the most in my career, and I'd have to look up the author, but it's The Challenger Sale. And it really, it's interesting. What they did is the whole thing is based on four types of salespeople. The lone wolf, the relationship person, the hard worker, and the challenger. And everybody, if you were going to, and what they did is they essentially put them head to head in the sales competition, right? Based on numbers, based on clients brought in, based on revenue, and they did statistical analysis on everything all the way through it. And it really opened my eyes because, and I think this can go in any kind of business, even not sales, is you'd ask anybody, I'll even ask you, like, who do you think won out in the end?
So the four kind of extrinsic values, can you repeat them?
So the lone wolf, the hard worker, the relationship person, and the challenger.
My guess would be the relationship builder.
Yeah, they were the worst.
They were the worst. Oh, wow. Okay, so my second guess is going to be the introverted person.
The lone wolf?
The lone wolf.
Nope.
Okay, you have to tell me now.
So it's the challenger.
The challenger.
And that's why this opened my eyes, because as I was going through sales and say it was all about relationship, yeah, the lunches and the golf and the, you know, how's your family and stuff like that. And that stuff's important. There's yes, no discounting it, because yes, people do want to have business relationships with people that they like. They want to, yes, buy from their friends. They want to do business, yes, with their friends, right? But if you're not impacting their business, if you're not teaching them better ways to do things, if you're not changing their frame of mind, okay, and helping them grow, it doesn't matter if you take them out for golf once a month and a, yeah, nice steak dinner, right? So that really opened my eyes and it changed my whole approach to business. And it's really about being a teacher. It's, mm-hmm, it's about approaching somebody with a different way to look at things, challenging the status quo and challenging them to look beyond that status quo, mm-hmm, and what can they do better and what can they do different in order to get to their goals. And if you can take a person through that type of cycle where it's almost transformational,
yeah,
not only is it a lot easier to ask for the business, but they're so much more appreciative of it, right? Because
you care.
You transformed their way of doing business. You essentially consulted them to success.
Yeah.
You know, so that was very transformational for me. And when I started thinking of sales in that way and business dealings in that way, it moved mountains. It changed a lot.
That's a good book. We haven't had that one on before, so I'll have to make a note of that. Okay, third question. I got to give you some context. I'm granting you a wish. And you get, okay, to have dinner with any leader of your choice. And this leader could be living, they could have been passed away. Who are you having dinner with? And what is the dinner conversation?
I would love to sit down with Jeff Bezos. I think it's fascinating that he made this Amazon empire start out of his garage.
So
and I would just love to understand what he did to transform his garage into this like tech e-commerce like monster.
Yeah. He's come up before just to see the post-it notes on the wall of the garage.
Yeah. Like how does
and
this
then now we're all like daily Amazon users.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. Like, yeah. I mean
everything is in the palm of our hand. Okay, I'm gonna have you finish the show. Thank you so much for your time today. Finish this sentence for my last question of our Fab Four, and we'll end the show with your answer. Heart-centered leadership is?
You know what? I think the biggest thing I got from your book and heart-centered leadership is to be a human being. I think that if you go into every leadership engagement with, I don't want to say your heart on your sleeve, but like essentially looking at it from a human being standpoint with compassion and empathy and seeing it from that other person's point of view. And really just looking to, you see it a lot where leaders don't really, you know, pull, they help and they support and things that like, it really is like, how can I help you? And also, understanding where the other person is coming from. I think what I do in any leadership scenario when people come to me for advice is I always like to put it back on them. It's like, well, what do you think we should do in this situation versus just this is what we should do, right? And getting more of a collaborative conversation, which creates a bit more comfort in generating that move forward. So But yeah, I really think it's about humility, empathy, collaboration, but just going into every situation with being a human being about things and taking the other person into consideration first and foremost.
Thanks so much for joining me today on Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the show today and have learned some new tools for your leadership toolkit from our amazing Heart-Centered guest. If you like the show, feel free to give us a rating and a review, and we always welcome your feedback anytime. If you're ready to master the art of heart, my new book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook, is now available on Amazon, or you can click the link below in our description.